Hey everybody, this is Daryl with AfterBuzz TV. I was recently looking to buy a car and thought to myself, there has to be a better way. It's such a stressful process. That's when my friend told me about a new way to buy a car. It's called TrueCar.com. At TrueCar.com, you can actually see what others paid for the car you're looking for in your area, so you know when you're getting a great price. Because at TrueCar.com, you get a savings certificate, and you just take that savings certificate to a TrueCar.com certified dealer, so you don't need to worry about the hassle and anxiety of the old way to buy a car. And TrueCar.com users save an average of $3,000 off the MSRP. So seriously, if you're ready to buy a car, why wouldn't you go to TrueCar.com? Negotiation-free guaranteed savings, a hassle-free experience, and a TrueCar certified dealer that is committed to a new and better way to buy a car. Come on, save time, save money, and never overpay. Visit TrueCar.com today.
You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
The AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California. Presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is AfterBuzz TV's Fargo After Show.
We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip.
And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Fargo After Show.
Welcome back, Fargo Fan Club. My name is Oriana Leo, your host on tonight's journey through Episode 7, Who Shaves the Barber, for Fargo on FX. And joining me on this lovely evening, to my left is...
Sarah Huggins. Hello.
And to her left is...
JB Zimmerman.
Thank you so much for holding down the fort last week, JB.
Totally. Happy to be here.
We really appreciate it. I was busy getting married.
Yeah,
I had a surprise wedding.
Surprise secret
wedding last weekend. I'm exhausted, but I'm so happy to be here with you all. And we are kicking off our show with a very special guest. His name is Spencer Draver. He plays Gordo Nygaard. And we open the scene with a very special kind of at-home scene that closes with some nose picking. Spencer, are you there?
Yes, hello.
Hi, Spencer. Welcome to our after show.
Oh, great.
We're so happy to have you. And we love your performance, especially in tonight's episode. Your character of Gordo has a gun placed in his backpack, and we see the camera follow Gordo to school. What was it like filming that scene? How long did it take?
The outside scene?
Yeah.
Or
the outside scene.
Where I had to pick my nose?
Yeah.
Well, it actually was pretty short, and I actually had to pick my nose.
You did.
Nailed it, one take, yeah. I bet.
Just... Did you have to practice nose picking for that scene?
No, I'm a pro.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So, Spencer, can you tell us how old you are and where you live?
I'm 10 years old, and I live in Vancouver, BC.
Awesome. Nice. So are you up past your bedtime right now?
No, not past bed.
Okay, good. All right, so we're not getting you in any trouble. No. How did you audition for this part? Was it a live audition or was it an audition over Skype?
It was an audition at a place called Shoreline, and it was pretty. My dad, it was like one of his favorite movies, aww, and he helped me with the accent. So I went in there with the accent, and I'm pretty sure lots of the kids didn't. And it was pretty weird, too, because we never got any feedback for, like, a month or 2 months.
Wow, that's a long time.
And then it just said, well, my mom got the email, and it was about Fargo, and she's like, oh, here we go, we didn't get it. And then, so it said I got it.
Wow, and how did you feel when you got that news? What was that like?
Well, I actually was at school, and my mom said, oh, a contract came in for Fargo, and I was like... what came in for what? And I actually didn't remember doing the audition. And then I did, and I was kind of scared because I was like, oh, am I gonna have to move to Calgary?
Yeah.
Oh, I forget they shot that in Canada.
Yeah. Did you want to move to Calgary?
Yeah.
No, because all my friends are here.
Yeah. Aww. That makes sense.
Of course. I know there's a lot of directors because there's so many episodes they have to split it up. Was it hard working with that many different people telling you different things and how to play the role, or was it pretty easy working with that team?
Pardon me, could you repeat it?
Sure. Spencer, I know that each director only directed two episodes. Since you are in most of the episodes, you must have worked with a few directors. Was that hard, or did you find it easy to sort of pick up and go with the crew?
Well, it was easy, and one of the directors I really made a connection with because we talked about basketball most of the time there. And, some directors have a different style. Like, I just actually, one will do it in, like take after take until it's right. And then one will take, three takes without cutting and then a break. So...
How do you prefer to work?
It's not that hard, but... Yeah, it can be a little challenging.
How do you prefer to work? Do you prefer to do take after take without cutting, or do you like to cut between takes?
It depends, if I'm tired or not. or how cold it is.
Absolutely. There was a lot of scenes that were outside in the snow. Did you get cold? What is it like? How long do they have you outside?
I think the only scene I had outside was when I was picking the
nose-picking one.
Thank goodness.
So everyone else gets to be really cold. Yeah.
I'm so glad I'm not the guy running out with his just underwear on.
Yes, I'm also glad that you're not that person. Now, you have been in some other productions. I saw that you were on something on PBS. What was that called?
It's called Plum Landing. It's an animated series that's all about... learning and the desert and, that kind of stuff.
That's really cool. Do you enjoy doing that kind of that animated voice work?
Yeah, it's really fun because, you don't have to remember anything. You can just go there in, sweatpants and an old shirt. You don't have to get all,
You don't have to get all dressed up, but you get to read, right? You get to read the script right there.
I have a question, Spencer. How did you get started in the business? Was it encouraged by your parents, or was it just something you always wanted to do?
It started from my teacher, and she said, why don't you put him into acting, or he can go to fine an art school. And my mom was like, I don't know. I've seen those parents on shows. So I tried it, and my first audition, I got Diary of a Wimpy Kid, too. But it was a tiny part, but at that time, it was huge.
Diary of a Wimpy Kid, too, that's a really big deal. No matter how big the part is, every part is major, I would say.
Yeah.
Definitely, and it's great to hear that you're still in school. Doing both kind of working and doing school is a tremendous achievement, so congrats on that.
And any upcoming projects? I mean, we know you have a few episodes left of Fargo. Obviously, production is wrapped. Are you working on anything now, or are you just getting to be a kid in school?
A show called The Haunting Hour, I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but it's kind of a kid's horror show. Ooh. And I'm actually a ghost in it.
Ooh. So,
nice.
Where did that shoot?
It was here in, I think it was in Burnaby.
That's great.
I'm pretty sure. So, and Calgary's the only time I've ever traveled to a different province or even country to do something.
Oh, wow.
So it sounds like you get to stay home a lot.
Yeah.
That's great. Because you get to hang out with your friends, you get to be with your parents, you get to do all the normal stuff, but you're getting to do some pretty cool stuff on TV. Yeah. So bravo to you. Do we have any final questions for the young man?
I was going to ask, who is your favorite person or one of your favorite actors to work with on Fargo? Is there anyone that's like a prankster on set or like any fun stories that you have to share?
All of them are great, but I'd have to say probably Martin Freeman because we were having a fight over who brought the Chinook in. And my mom's like, every time we come, we bring a Chinook. And Well, a Chinook is actually a wave of heat that goes into, like, cold areas.
Oh, wow. See, we're not talking about fish.
And then then Martin was like, no, I bring it in. I'm special. Only me.
That's cool.
So some good sense of humor on set. Sounds really fun. Mm-hmm. Anything else you want to ask folks?
No, I think I'm good, Jamie.
All right. Well, we're going to jump into this episode, but Spencer, thank you so much for joining us and being our special guest. Do you have any, can you give us any juicy nuggets about what's coming up on upcoming episodes for your character?
Oh, I wish I could. getting, when I was filming the ends of my, like, the last few episodes, I'd only get my parts of the script, so this gives you a little idea on how top secret everything
Absolutely.
Is.
Absolutely.
So are you watching every week, then, to see what happens?
Well, I'm watching some parts, because it's not really for kids.
That's true.
And my mom and my dad on standby when I watch them.
Absolutely. Great parents. Spencer, you have a Twitter account. We'd like our fans to be able to follow you. Yeah. Do you know what that is? What's your Twitter handle?
Spencer Draver. Just Spencer Draver. That's for everything. Just Spencer Draver.
Spencer Draver. And your last name is D-R-E-V-E-R, right?
Yes.
Okay, perfect.
Perfect.
Nice. So fans, please follow Spencer on Twitter and let him know what you think about his performance and what else you'd like to see him doing. And Spencer, thank you so much for joining us. It was our pleasure.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Of course. Yes. Have a great night.
Thank you. You too.
Good night.
And Fargo fan club. I mean, what a sweetheart. Our little Gordo, right? Yeah. Absolutely adorable. 10-year-old opening up our show as he opens up essentially the episode tonight.
Right?
So we open up at the other Nygaard household. They're getting ready. It's breakfast time. The backpack that we know has been
tampered with,
right, from last time. I loved the cinematography that followed the backpack. You know, like, that was where, so we knew something was going to happen. We knew it was going to be major, following it out of the house, through, by the nose pick, through the school bus, all the way into the classroom with a monkey, you know, monkeying around that causes it to come flying out. What did you guys have any thoughts or reactions to that scene?
Well, I'm happy that they keep that sort of theme with Fargo. I mean, in the movie, it made that sort of really a big part of it, the cinematography and how they shoot certain things to give each scene a deeper meaning. And I think that rewards the viewers with multiple watchings, sort of seeing how it follows the backpack, and then you can kind of pick up new things each time.
Very good.
I like that.
Yeah. I just love that we had a few moments like that we'll get to later, but when we have the mass carnage that we only got to hear and not see from Lauren, really had that same feel to it, and goodness. I loved that. I loved that because it really allows your imagination to go somewhere instead of it just showing you everything.
Right?
There's something far more artistic about it.
Definitely.
I didn't take a look at who was directing this episode. Did either of you?
I believe it's Scott Winant. This is the first episode this season that we've seen from him.
Thank you so much, Jamie. Look at you, bringing something major to the show.
Yes.
So the next scene, we see Chief Oswald with a warrant at Chaz Nygaard's house. You know, Kitty is there. And it's very melodramatic. It's very, like, it's kind of dark. It's quiet. We've got this music, this ominous music. And we see that Chaz is at work living, like, the last few moments of his life. His untampered with life, having the story in his office of, oh, I'll call my wife back later. I'll call her back later.
Whatever, yeah.
And he picks up the phone and you can just see his into everything's crumbling. And that Gordo has been arrested.
Right. I was like, wait a second. Is that allowed? Is that like...
In nowadays, with all the violence that happens, I really think that if you do pick a firearm to school, you get arrested even if you're like 5 years old.
Definitely, and in Gordo's case, I know he's got some learning disabilities, the character.
Yes.
You know, obviously he has that jar in his
closet. Yes, he has the autism, according to his parents.
Exactly. So I don't know how that would play out in a normal sort of court of law situation, but definitely, I mean, there's so many instances in our world where this is coming up, this gun problem.
Absolutely.
Just does not cease.
I was in Santa Barbara this weekend, and
oh my goodness,
this killing happened, I think, on our wedding day or the day before.
No. Yeah, in Isla Vista, right?
Yeah, in Isla Vista. It's really tremendously sad. And but one of the things that we can see that is a theme, you know, I really appreciated this episode because I felt sensitive to what just happened. that they didn't show all of the gun violence.
Right.
I appreciated that very much, that there was a little bit of imagination required, right, that instead of showing the carnage, you know, that you could imagine what was going on. Still really horrible.
Right.
But not having to show it all.
You heard how many shots were fired.
Because that stuff is actually happening in real life.
Right.
And I know that for young people, I'm really glad that Spencer doesn't get to watch this.
Right.
You know,
right.
What great parents,
yeah,
to really be supervising. And I appreciate the makers of Fargo of being
sensitive to it.
Not just sensitive, but having the artistic sense that you, yeah, don't have to show everything.
No.
Fans, what do you think? Let us know on YouTube, on Twitter. You know, you have our handles. But I'm really interested to what your thoughts are about, you know, the gun violence that is on TV every day, on what you see on your favorite shows. You know, where is that line? I just really appreciated it.
Yeah, I did too. I don't think anything was missing because they did that, you know?
Right.
I mean, we got it. We got what happened. We got the magnitude of it as well.
Right.
You know?
But Lester putting the gun in his own nephew's backpack. What kind of human being does that?
Well, we know that Lester is not completely with it.
Right. Well, he seems with it now. He seems with the...
He's smarter.
He's made such a change, hasn't he,
yeah,
in this episode? Like, literally his face. He's got the confidence.
Right.
And it makes me think of Lorne and the way he talks about his worldview and how the animal kingdom. I feel like Lester has just stepped into the animal kingdom, like kind of kill or be killed. He's now defending himself. It's twisted. It's wrong.
Right.
But he wasn't going to go down. I don't know. It's disturbing, right, but I feel like...
No, I agree. I mean, it's an interesting dynamic of it being completely wrong and his character being, like, utterly immoral. But at the same time, there's a part of me that sort of roots,
yes,
for Lester,
yeah,
just because he was such a bumbling fool,
yes,
before.
Because he was such a loser, and now he's becoming a winner, even though it's, you know, morally,
right,
reprehensible.
Well, he's trying to take control of his life for once, and I think that is something people can recognize as a positive amidst all the negative wrongdoings that he's supportive.
Well, and he's, like, super unpredictable now, you know?
He's
just don't know what he's going to do.
We don't know what's going to happen, but it's made it very exciting.
Yeah, it has. Sometimes he's confident, sometimes he's not, you know? He makes stupid decisions, he makes smart ones.
So we know that he killed his wife, Pearl, after he snapped. He snapped after being abused for so long, right? I mean, maybe he was the world's worst husband, but when you verbally abuse someone and emotionally abuse someone, they're going to snap at some point, and he did. But his brother did the same thing to him, right? It was just, that was the straw that broke the camel's back in the last episode,
right,
of visiting him in the hospital and telling him, essentially, like you discussed in the last show, that practically saying, I never loved you or I never wanted you, you're garbage to me, kind,
right,
of, is the feeling of it.
Yeah.
Which is just too much to handle for this guy. He's not made for that kind of trauma.
No.
But I'm just thinking of this as Chief Oswald opens the gun safe in Chaz's garage and pulls out the piglet? Is that what he called the machine gun? He called it something. I want to say it was the piglet. With Anne the Hammer and Pearl's panties.
Undies. I don't like
and those
and
photos.
And her erotica photos.
Yes. What did I write down? Sexy Pearl pics.
Oh, nice. My gosh.
Like, which... They were not that sexy.
No. They were interesting, to say the least.
But we see that, and what I loved was that, again, the cinematography and the use of sound, because you can see what happens to Chaz, the sound goes out.
Yeah.
And that, I feel like, is really commonplace. When something really horrible happens to you and jarring...
You're not remembering the
sound. No, everything goes out, and it's, yeah, like tunnel vision and black and whatever. I felt like that was... very well demonstrated.
Yeah.
Definitely. I mean, even his wife, like, hawked a loogie on his forehead, and it was still just that shock.
Right.
It wasn't even enough to get him to snap out of it.
And they were, like, holding her back, the officers. I thought that was a really powerful scene.
It was a powerful scene to have that buzz of no sound, almost.
Right.
And she's screaming with nothing coming out, and, like you said, the spit hitting his face, and you can just see on his... He's trying to register what is going on.
Yeah.
Right.
He's like, how is this happening to me?
And... then we see our Chief Oswald back at the police station with Lester, and I was really touched at how upset the chief was. He was saying that he looked up the history of their town to find out what, like, the biggest losses of life had been before. Remember, he was saying it's like India or Africa where all these people die at once, and it's some horrible situation that he can't get his head around, but that, you know, 20 or 30 years ago, 16 people died from some horrible cause and this and that. And that he says, you know, three people were murdered in 2 days and there's a child that's been arrested for bringing a gun to school. This is flabbergasting him. Yeah. He's like, right. You can see on his face, he's devastated. But there's like an innocence that's been broken for him.
Yeah.
Particularly.
Definitely. I mean, that scene was kind of a crazy scene in itself, the interrogation. I mean, it seemed so much that he wanted to believe everything that Lester was saying, almost like a little kid was listening to his older brother or dad or something tell something he almost knew was going to be a lie, but still
100%
could not. Right. Like, there was nothing that Lester could say that he wouldn't believe. He was like, just, and then what?
And 100%. And of course, he's breaking police protocol. You don't tell the suspect what happened. He literally told him, you know, that he was having an affair, right? Yes, right. I mean, Lester just, all he had to do was agree, essentially. He, you know, Chief Oswalt leads him down a path of what he wants to believe happened. And Lester does a great job, I think, of corroborating this quote-unquote story. And that he wanted to tell the truth, but he was afraid. All things that Chief Oswalt told him he was feeling himself.
Right.
Right? All completely fabricated by the chief of police.
I was actually surprised, though, that when Chaz got arrested, that he wasn't, he didn't seem like that surprised by it. He wasn't like protesting as much as like I would be if I was being taken in for something completely ludicrous, you know?
And we didn't see that until he's in the jail cell.
Right.
Right? When he's like screaming bloody murder and he's really trying to rationalize, you know, and defend himself. I can't imagine what it would feel like for something like that.
Right. I mean, maybe in later episodes we'll see a little bit more of the backlash and the interaction between them. Because it seemed like in the preview they'll both be in the same jail.
Yeah.
Or there's an interaction. But yeah, I think, like Oriana was just saying, sort of a moment where it was like a stun grenade went off.
Right.
And he didn't even know how to react.
Right. Beautifully put. Beautifully put. And I think he probably... I'm sure if he could have gone back in time, he would have reacted a little differently, but we can't control these things,
true.
You know? And I think that was very well illustrated by the lack of sound and all of that he was just completely shell-shocked by what happened.
Agreed.
But what I thought was so interesting was that it seemed like during this interrogation that Lester was trying not to smile. Did you guys notice that? Like, he kept clearing his throat.
Right, because he, like, realized he was about to get off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he, like... I feel like he had this little sense of, like you were saying, accomplishment before it was even over. Like he knew.
Right.
He was being led down a path to his innocence by the chief of police, and he started to realize what was happening.
Right.
Getting maybe drunk on his power, perhaps.
Definitely. I mean, it seemed like throughout the episode arc, he sort of got more confidence and took more liberties as it went on. I mean, obviously at the end, he takes the biggest one.
And I couldn't believe, so when he's leaving and he, you know, you can see Chaz is in the jail cell screaming bloody murder and Lester doesn't look back. He smiles.
Right.
And then that's the intro to the show, to this episode right there. And it just made me think, oh my God, like revenge on Lester's behalf. Like he's turned into a different man. Has this been Lauren's master plan all along? Like, I don't know what Lauren's master plan is, but this would be it if there was one. Would be turning someone who is pathetic into someone who's in control of his own destiny, but also doesn't care what sort of damage he does.
That makes me kind of want to, like, dig into Lauren's backstory and see if he was, like, a similar character.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be great if we had a Lauren Malvo spinoff?
Oh, my God. That would
be Billy Bob is the show for me. So I think it's almost a spinoff itself. Yeah.
I agree. Every scene with Billy Bob, it just captivates me.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's perfectly
I wish we could have more time with him. But then again, it would be, like, the Billy Bob show.
Right.
It wouldn't be a full Fargo.
Exactly. I think he definitely wants to teach Lester the ways of how you should live, but not necessarily enough to bring him on as an apprentice.
Like, right.
He doesn't trust anybody.
I don't think he's smart enough for that. Yeah. But I think he'd be very proud.
Yeah. Definitely.
Right?
Definitely.
He'd be very proud to see what has become of Lester.
Right. I mean, he told him in their, I think it was their first meeting, mm-hmm. you know, you think there are rules in our life, and there aren't. And there's so many things... In later episodes, he shows sort of a more animal instinct right. of how to go about living life instead of by these like arbitrary laws and things.
This is a little bit off the topic, but from a few episodes ago when Lauren presented the riddle to Gus Grimley of
right.
why does the human eye see more shades of green than any other color, right. I have quoted that like 10 times
really?
Since that episode.
Really?
I've been telling people that just because I enjoy fun facts.
Right.
But also, I have been noticing how many shades of green I see.
Really?
I'm not joking. I've been going outside and like looking around and realizing how true that statement is and how true that is to the psyche of someone like that. That you only see the things that help you survive.
Right.
Right? And that episode really got to me, honestly. Even the man that gave everything away, that parable.
Yeah.
I even used that. I used that to with a couple friends. I'm like making all kind of Fargo references.
Yeah.
I don't know if anyone else.
Educational TV.
I don't know if anyone else is doing
this. The more you know.
The more you know.
Everyone's like, really?
Brought to you by
so
Fargo
smart.
On FX. But we do have a parable in the title of this show that we'll get to at the end, and we'll have to discuss what we think that means or what the implications are. But our next scene is Molly in the blizzard. She's having kind of a flashback.
It's her perspective.
Her perspective of what happened.
Yeah.
And she sees Lauren with the machine gun. And she gets shot. And she awakens in the hospital with Greta and Gus. And, I mean, what a guy.
I know. I was glad she was alive. I really thought that was the end for her.
Yeah.
I did. I thought it was over.
I didn't, but
you didn't?
At the same time, I was not here and part of the group.
Right.
I
wasn't
either. There's no way that the story could be over.
Right.
Right?
That's true.
Right.
That would be really sad if they didn't get to, like,
there needs to be some kind of,
yeah,
like...
Definitely. I mean, they made it seem like it was completely curtains for
sure.
Molly. But
yeah.
Given that it was only episode 6, I thought, you know, I don't know if Gus can carry us to 10.
Right.
Right.
Yeah,
that's
just
true.
From a storytelling perspective,
right.
She's so... integral to this story.
Yeah.
We really can't do anything without her. And then I was thinking, well, even if she's dead, there must be flashbacks.
Right.
Or
right.
something where her character is there to
lives
tell
on.
The story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Plus, I mean, she's the main detective, if there is one, in the show.
Right.
I mean, she's
that's
the only
true.
One that's sort of
she's
on the right track.
She's the only one that even cares about the truth.
Anything, yeah.
I mean, we have our, you know, bumbling Chief Oswald just is so emotionally impacted by everything.
Yeah.
He can't see
he
anything.
He is completely blown away by the mayhem of this.
He is.
Cannot even grab a hold of anything.
No, he can't see anything for what it really is. So Gus admits that he shot her and that he'll get her a new spleen if he has to, which is
a tall
so sweet.
Order, but yeah.
But I thought that was, for him, who doesn't seem to have been able to accomplish a lot so far, I think that's kind of a big deal.
Right.
To be able to admit to someone's face that you, I mean, he already
he
had to admit
mistake.
That he let Lauren go. He, you know, he had to admit
right.
that to his own. I mean, this guy eats a lot of crow.
Right.
I don't know. Have you guys ever had that situation where like you just had to eat it multiple times in front of people? Like go to people, go to your work. I made a huge mistake. Go to someone you love. I made a huge mistake over and over. I mean,
I don't think I have.
This guy, I feel
I
like
absolutely
you have.
I mean,
really?
my job sort of depends on being able
that's
to take
true.
The blame for when things happen. I mean, not all the time will something go wrong that's within your control.
Sure.
But sometimes you're still, you know, you have to take responsibility for when things do get out of hand.
Find a solution.
So I've absolutely done that.
Absolutely.
And it's not fun.
It's not fun at all,
at
right?
All. Not the
And
least.
Sometimes you know that it's, if you're smart, you know, business person, I see everything as a business challenge. But if
yeah.
you're a smart business person, you know sometimes taking it on the chin or apologizing for something, even if you didn't do it, might be strategically the better choice.
Yeah.
Even if it hurts your ego. And I don't think that Gus is that sophisticated, but he cares enough about the case and he cares enough about Molly.
Right.
That it makes this the choice he has to make. And his daughter. Right? He's, like, trying to set a good example for her,
that's
and he
true.
Has such a heavy conscience. Like, this was the only choice for him to make, but I just feel really bad for him as a
yeah.
character. Like, Lester, it was a loser. Like a loser that couldn't take initiative to do anything, but Gus is a different kind of loser in the sense that he
yeah.
just keeps us a lot of hard knocks.
Yeah.
He's really trying.
Yeah.
I want him
he
to
is
win
really trying.
On some level.
And Lester's just getting lucky, I think, with, like, a few things.
For the time being.
Yeah,
I feel like
the
tables are going to turn.
Of course. But he brings Molly flowers.
He does.
Adorable.
And, you know, he sees this whole... And I'm not sure that I got everything from the chart she had on the window. Like, I wish... I mean, first of all, where's the cell phone to take a picture? Where's the camera to take a picture of the chart? She just writes it all up and then leaves. Like, I wanted to take a picture of it.
Right.
Well, that hard
this
work.
Is 2006, right?
Yeah.
So are there camera phones?
There have to be.
Yeah.
Well, some. I feel like
so
there are a lot less.
So maybe in Bemidji maybe and Duluth they don't. But right. A camera? Anything. A sketch.
That's he should have sketched it. He
a sketch of the window, just because I felt like, oh, someone's going to clean that, and that's all
right.
Hard work. I don't know.
And done.
But he seems really sad when she leaves, and there's like no. What was he waiting for? You know what I mean? Dad comes, and they have another. They have a really nice moment between the two of them too, where Dad tells Molly he's proud of her for the first time, because he's been going on and on about how she should quit the police and that she should get
that
married
was a nice
and
moment.
She should essentially be someone else. And I think we've all had that too, of like, just support me. Please just be happy for me doing what I'm doing. Even if you don't love it, even if it's not your favorite thing.
And he's just thankful that she's alive as well.
And he found out that the guy had a machine gun.
Yeah.
And that she, you know, was like defending herself.
Right.
And he's really proud of her. And that was really sweet. And I think important for her. But something didn't happen with Gus. Like, I don't know what he was expecting.
Right. Like,
he just came
to
tell
gonna,
her,
like,
I shot you.
Right.
Here's some flowers. Now can we go on another date?
Oopsies. Right.
I don't know. Yeah. What did you guys... Where is that coming from, do you think? Like, his sadness when she leaves?
I think he just wants to do more. I mean, he took responsibility in that he owned up for it. And so that was good. Obviously, when you own up for something, you take most of the blame away.
Right.
And so he wants to, obviously, figure out how to fix it. Spleen, first on the list.
Right.
But I think practical. Now he feels responsible for helping fall through with everything in the case.
Right.
And... obviously, Molly is not going to let anything drop. So I think,
and she
he's
even
going
says
to
him, "Keep your chin up.
Right,
we're winning.
Right."
And it's just really sweet because she's being wheeled away in a wheelchair, telling him to cheer up,
right.
To keep his chin up. She's the one that's been in the hospital, but it just definitely shows their relationship and that she's the stronger one. Obviously,
I think too. Like, she has other things on her mind as well. Like, she didn't know who she had shot. And, mm-hmm. you know, that's kind of a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think, I think, like, she was grateful to be alive. She's grateful that he told her that he was the one who shot her. But, like, she's got other things.
She does, yeah. She's
like,
got a
to
lot
worry
going
about.
On.
Yeah.
So, very briefly, Lester goes home and we see that he...
Finally.
He has, this is a whole new man,
right?
he walks in. He's
making
got,
moves.
He's got a different, like, air about him. He looks at the blood and just, like, walks around it, pulls out the phone book, and just calls the cleaning service.
Right.
This is episode 7.
Right.
That mess has been there for a long time.
7 episodes.
Yeah. I mean, even if it's only been a week in the show.
Right.
Still too long.
Pretty disgusting. But what happens? He gets hung up on?
Yeah, I think he gets to the part where there's blood everywhere, and then that's where they...
But he says, you guys do crime scenes, right? Does the person on the other end say yes?
Well, because there he was like, no, there's not really a lot of broken glass, and he's like...
He was saying it's a break-in.
Right, exactly, and I think because the town is so small, they're not used to any crime of that magnitude.
Thank you
all.
For clarifying. I'm thinking crime scene is a crime scene. No,
right.
The Bemidji crime scene is like a break-in.
Right,
it's
like kids throwing rocks at windows
right.
or something.
Right.
So he might have a harder time getting this cleaned up than
yeah.
he thought.
Exactly.
However, he did say in the beginning episodes that they had a service, some kind of like hazmat type service.
Right.
That they left him the number. He just hasn't called it.
Right.
We'll see how he deals with that. And then we jump over to water aerobics in Reno, Nevada. We know this has
yes.
to be important if we're going to close up on this guy's face.
Right.
Which I'm thinking, who the hell is this? We've seen him before. He walks into Rundle Real Estate, and there waits for him is our favorite Lauren Malvo in front of all those phones that talks about how there isn't a pin in Georgia, and we get to know a little bit too much about this guy and what he doesn't like about Georgia and his ex-wife.
Right.
But Lauren is there to find out why he has guys tailing him, why they try to take him out. And who did this?
Right.
Right? And this is like the master of revenge. I mean, I don't know what this guy's name is, but he pretty much just says, it's not my business to get involved in squabbles that are personal. And if somebody calls me about something, it's, you know, we always have a solution, essentially. Nobody calls about asking for you.
Right.
Do you believe him? What was your take on that scene?
I don't know. I got kind of a mixed feeling
from
that.
Yeah.
It seemed like, on one hand, he had to stay professional as possible when dealing with that kind of sketchy business model. But on the other, I mean, it seemed weird that he wouldn't sort of, if things went astray, like, why wouldn't you try to fix it right away? I mean, there are only so many options in that.
I thought it was interesting that he walks in and says, are you going to let me sit down or are you going to kill me standing up? Right. When he could have just walked in and closed the door and ran away. Like,
right, just,
I mean, help, I guess he with me. Some with someone like Lauren, and he knows Lauren because he's hired him, he knows it's inevitable. Like,
right.
if he wants to kill you, he's going to kill you.
Right.
So don't
There's
run.
Really nothing
There's
you can
no
do.
Point. But that was really interesting that he just, he knew exactly what was going to happen. And Lauren gave him the two options, ambulance phone or coroner phone, right? Which one am I going to choose? We still don't know
right
exactly what happened, but he gives him the information. I mean, is that what, how does
he definitely gave him the information because afterwards
information.
We saw that he was,
yes.
he went to the
And
building.
There's no other way that would have happened.
Right.
So this guy was implicated in some way. You know, Lauren doesn't tend to find these people and hurt them for no reason.
Right.
There's some reason. This doesn't mean it's a good reason.
Right.
But there's some connection there. So he clearly knew something.
Yeah.
At least who, they said Fargo sent them, Mr.
Yeah.
Numbers and Mr. Wrench, if they said that Fargo sent them, he knew that this would be that the guy would know.
Yeah.
And apparently he did.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I think that, I mean, it's possible that Lauren killed him and found out some other way. But I do think that the phone guy maybe didn't plan for them to come get Lauren, but knew the other company or something. I mean, obviously the world is pretty small in that sort of business.
Yeah,
right.
I feel like he could, through a few references, figure out what had happened.
So before we get to the carnage that we just hear and we don't see, we see Molly visiting Mr. Wrench
right.
in the hospital.
That was her victim.
That was her victim. She hadn't really known until
right.
then who it was. I thought it was really interesting that when she says, you know, what's the point to him? She's trying to have this conversation and she goes, what's the point? You know, your friend's dead. You're going to spend the rest of your life in jail. And for what? And he leaves the room. In that sense of turns his head so that he doesn't have to look at her or talk
right.
to her, be part, you know, because he can't go anywhere, clearly.
Right.
But what is the point? And that sort of got me thinking of, like, what is the point? That's sort of the whole idea of Fargo, the film.
Right, the movie, yeah.
Right,
exactly.
Is what's the, like, why would you go do this, create this horrible situation for absolutely nothing?
Right.
Right, all this pain and carnage for nothing.
Right.
And it continues, the cycle of violence. And here he is, like, and she's absolutely right.
Well, yeah, I think the whole show kind of shows that how things are so mundane and people are so much out for just the very short term. Like, they see one move ahead and that is it. Like,
right.
no consequences of it. And that's how they get into trouble. And it just downward spirals into just a catastrophe.
But I think it's so reflective of reality.
Right.
Of just how incredibly sure. short-sighted people can be. And they'll do the stupidest things for something that, in the long run, is not important.
No.
Like everything that's going on in the show. So they show us Chaz in jail and that he's transferred to county and the looks on everyone's
right.
faces.
And you said, you had a good comment. You were like, he's a pretty boy and he's not going to last
long. He's not
going
to make it in county.
Yeah.
No, a pretty boy like him isn't going to make it in county. And not just that, I also got the idea of, you know, in our society today, when someone is accused of something, it ruins their life, whether they're guilty or
yeah,
not.
That's true.
And it gave me that feeling when he's being walked and every deputy is looking and
right.
shaking their head.
Speculating,
you disgusting.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You know, they're all making these judgment calls. Lester's winning because
yeah.
of that. You know, because he doesn't have to be on the receiving end of it. No matter
right.
what happens, it's already ruining his brother's life.
Right.
Already
no,
from this very
they're
moment.
They're no longer looking at him in any way.
But guilty.
Yeah, but guilty.
Period.
Right. And it's sad to see because that does happen. I mean, it's obviously
it
very rare,
happen.
But you do hear these stories about people getting out like 15, 20 years afterwards.
Yeah.
And they were wrongly accused. And it's like, how can you ruin someone's life like that? And so it's
just to save their own.
Yeah.
But then, and on top of it, the shoddy police work. That happens too.
A lot.
You know what I mean? I mean, just here in LA County, there's some really bad stuff going on.
What are you talking about?
Yeah. Here? It's just, it's unbelievable. But I just think this is definitely art imitating life in some way.
Right.
That's why they call it a dark comedy.
Yeah.
And then we have the insurance office where Lester goes back And I couldn't believe the first thing he goes, well, I'm the victim here.
Yeah.
That's the first thing he says. And he says it was like he's almost happy about it. Like,
yeah.
I'm the victim here.
He's like, I'm ready to go back to work.
Okay. He's definitely flipped the script in his own head.
Yeah.
He's listening to something like a different track in his own mind, right? Instead of him being the victim and being, you know, shit on all the time, frankly.
He's been listening to some self-help tapes.
He's been listening to those Lauren Melvo tapes that he records, listens to over and over. And he's ready to start fresh. So he offers to go see Mrs. Hess.
Right. Who, I mean, we already know that, I mean, do we know his boss's name?
Whose boss? Mr. Hess?
Lester's.
Oh, no.
Must yeah, be. But he know. Says he says that her claim, Mrs. Hess's claim, got denied because he... Mr. Hess stopped paying his premiums. Right. So.
And I thought that was interesting. Like, why do they let that happen? Like, I wonder what the story is behind that.
I mean, just a character trait of Sam makes him seem sort of a slimy guy. He married a stripper, obviously, so, who he was cheating on. So I think it all just kind of adds up to the kind of person he was.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But, like, who was handling the account? Like, I don't know.
Right.
Because he was saying, oh, that's too bad for us because that was a really good account. And then I thought, whose job was that? Like, was that Lester's job? I don't know. I don't know, but he hasn't been very good at it.
He decides to break the news via house call.
Yeah, break the news via house call. I mean, I think he wanted to, was hoping to, well, he got what he was hoping for, obviously.
A little bit traumatized.
And again, so we are brought to this building. It looks like kind of like a federal building, but I don't know what it was.
Me neither. Yeah.
And we see our favorites, Key and Peele from Comedy Central.
That was so cool.
Fantastic. Great cameo. Great cameo. And we'll see if we're going to, you know, I don't know if we'll see them again.
We
must. So if they're, first of all, they're in their car.
They're FBI agents.
They're FBI agents, and they're obviously spying on who's inside.
Right.
Is what I'm assuming.
The FBI stakeout, of course.
The FBI stakeout in which they're debating the nature of fast food.
Right.
Is one.
Classic Key and Peele.
Classic Key and Peele. Classic agent talk, I imagine.
Yeah.
Are you really going to eat that? Yes, get away from me. But like how we were talking about before, the soundtrack of the carnage. And again, just how good Lorne is at what he does. That he can hide the machine gun in his jacket.
Just waltz in there.
Right in front of the agents that they don't even notice anything's going on until a body flies out of the window.
Right.
Whoops.
Oopsies. There's a lot of gunshots, too.
Lot of gunshots. Do we think this is realistic? That they're in a car across the street from a building that he's unloaded like 3 magazines. Well, and they haven't noticed.
I think it's just that short-sightedness in a different way. I mean, we have sort of the metaphysical one with everybody and their choices, but we also have a literal one. He literally walks right in front of the FBI's car.
Right.
And into the building that they're supposedly staking out. So it's sort of everything around is just not, like, these people have no clue.
And not only that, but also you don't tend to see things that you're not looking for.
Right.
And Lauren knows that so well.
Yeah.
And hence the green and the predators.
Right.
Right? That's how he gets. He does everything in plain sight, and that's how he gets away with it. It's so disturbing. But again, the cinematography and the choice of not showing that.
Even one person, except for the guy that fell out of the window.
When he came out the window, and then I think he showed one shot being fired off of someone else. I thought that was plenty and really efficacious.
Yeah.
And hearing people screaming and oh no, and he gets the answers out of everyone too. Did you notice that?
Yeah.
Where's the head guy, third
the
floor?
Elevator code.
What's the elevator code? Yeah. Like these people are dying.
Right.
And he's getting information from them. It's just over the top to me.
Yeah.
Like why? I don't know.
I'm really curious what that was about. Like who those people were and.
Absolutely. I would have loved. And that's part of the beauty of it. I would have loved to see the inside of that place.
Me too. Right.
And maybe we will next episode. Maybe. That would be amazing.
Well, my guess is that they are the other hitman group. Or maybe from last episode, the sort of mafia Don people that were working with Sam Hess, that operation.
Right.
Because it sort of seemed like a factory setting. If the FBI was there, maybe they were sort of staking out underground.
Yeah, they're definitely staking out whatever kind of, you know, weird shit they have going on over there. You know what I mean? They're definitely deep in a lot of criminal activity. And Fargo happened a long time ago, right? And so there's a lot of stuff going on that is probably being investigated. Finally, it's gotten up the rungs of the ladder for people to take some notice. But clearly, this ladder isn't that efficacious. So we see that Lauren just walks right out. Right. We have the FBI agents identifying themselves, fighting over who's going to talk, clearing the scene.
Calling for backup.
And they know they have nothing. They have a body. That's all they have. And Lauren walks right out. I don't know what else to say about that.
Yeah. I mean, Lauren, just like a boss.
Yeah. He has no fear.
No.
He has nothing. I don't think he has any feeling except for his joy at people's suffering.
I feel like he's equipped, though, to get out of any situation. Like, he knows, he's, like, confident in that, like, hey, if he gets stopped or something, like, he's gonna have a way out.
Well, and just, like, the fact that he could get a dying man to give him the code to go, like, it's just, he clearly has skills that give him that confidence.
Yeah.
Well, he's just aware of where he is. He's sort of at the top of the food chain, mm-hmm. and he knows that. So he knows whatever he's gonna do is gonna work out. And he's
Isn't
sort
that
of
amazing.
It's like yeah. It's like he's seen what's behind the curtain and knows how it works. So he's ahead of the game in a lot of ways.
So disturbing. So Lauren's protege Lester goes over to Mrs. Hess's and essentially
pays her a house call,
makes her think that there's a chance that he can get her claim filled or filed.
Right.
If she greases the right palms, meaning his.
Ew.
Gross. But
it's really gross.
Is a huge departure for him.
Right.
Yes, definitely.
He says he's going over there because he's going to, you know, console her and give her deliver the bad news. But really, he's just manipulating her.
Right.
To get what he wants.
Definitely. I mean, I was surprised to see how much swagger the new Lester brought in the door. But, again, I mean, he had clearly an agenda, which he accomplished.
Right.
That sex scene, just
gross.
Gross. And then looking at the picture of Sam Hess.
Ew,
and having that.
That's the creepy part.
That's the really gross part.
Yeah.
Ugh. And where, like, what is that doing for him? Like, does he feel responsible for it now? Even
what if
though
he impregnates her?
I was thinking
I didn't
the same
even think
I was thinking that. I was like, oh no, this could definitely go really bad.
Oh my God.
But he's looking at this picture of the two of them, and it's like he's winning, obviously. Right. But it's just so funny because a few episodes ago, you know, he didn't want anything. He had no ill wishes for Sam Hess. He wouldn't even take responsibility for an ill will against him.
Right.
For the man that made his life miserable. And here he is banging his wife and is having flashbacks of the fist in his face.
Yeah.
And he's like getting that ultimate revenge. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's really screwing over Sam Hess.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I can't believe this amazing shift. His brother, Hess, and the wife, like, all in a day. Busy.
Yeah, it's night and day. I mean, he took a complete 180. In the beginning, they said, Bob Odenkirk's character said that, you know, he remembers Lester being that nice boyfriend guy saying, like, I'm going to marry that girl.
Right.
And now he's committing adultery, after a murder. It's kind of
after setting up his brother. I mean, it's pretty amazing. This
the
web
shift
that Lauren has woven for him. So after Mrs. Hess, we see that Molly and Dad are driving over to the Bemidji PD. She wants to go and talk about the case at least for a minute before she goes home and finds that there's no one there. They're all out celebrating that the case is closed and that Chas Nygaard is the guy. And you could just see Molly, I don't know, what
meltdown
would you call
city
that, like a panic attack, meltdown. Yeah. I mean, she can tell it's occurring to her that she's perhaps been had or been played or that Lester is winning this game, this round.
Yeah.
I didn't quite know what to make of it. I mean, her dad is looking at her and she's standing
there. She's
just
like
snow.
Standing there, yeah.
It was kind of like the same shell shock that we saw Chaz in earlier.
I was definitely feeling the same sort of emotions watching that scene. I mean, it's sort of, there's a lot going on. Maybe she's feeling a little bit like she got played, like you said. You know, she also could feel like she missed something or she had it all wrong. I mean, there's a lot of negative thoughts that
it's
probably
just shock.
Yeah.
And that, you know, Alison Tolman, what a great actress. And everyone, I feel like the performances in this episode were really top-notch.
Yeah.
We're really getting somewhere.
Right.
And I'm really excited. And that really ended our episode. We did see scenes from the next. But before
ish.
We... Yeah, ish, as they always
does,
do.
Yeah.
Before we get into any predictions, I did want to talk about the title of our show.
Please educate.
Yes. That's all I have for news and gossip, unless you guys
have
anything.
I don't.
AfterBuzz TV News.
So the title of this episode is called Who Shaves the Barber? And what that refers to is the barber paradox, in which, and this is from Wikipedia, and my phone is about to die, but I will read it to you. The barber paradox is a puzzle derived from Russell's paradox. It was used by Bertrand Russell himself as an illustration of this paradox, and it's literally just a logical puzzle. But it starts this way. Suppose there is a town with just one barber who is male. In this town, every man keeps himself clean shaven, and he does so by exactly one of two things, shaving himself or going to the barber. Another way to state this is that the barber is a man in town who shaves all those and only those men in town who do not shave themselves. It's really just a mind game.
Yeah.
But the idea is the barber obviously shaves himself, but the logical question is, who does the barber go to? Everyone goes... The barber only shaves those men who don't shave themselves, so how could he be shaving himself? It's a logical puzzle that has really no answer. What does this have to do with the episode? That was, you know, I was reading this going, okay, so this is that circle of, you know, there is no answer, or the answer maybe is really obvious, but it doesn't seem like it would make sense. And I think that that may be what's happening with Chief Oswald. You know, is that the answer is right in front of him and Molly sees it the whole time, but it just doesn't seem possible.
Yeah.
That's all I can come up with. Fans, please.
Yeah, please. I would like
weigh
to know
in on this because, I mean, I just did this tiny search and I took logic in college, but it's been a very long time since I've really noodled out some major logic problems. So please, on our YouTube or tweet us, let us know what you think about the correlation between this particular episode and the barber and who he shaves.
I'm excited to see the responses.
Yeah, me too. So moving on, let's do some predictions.
Definitely.
And now, your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
JB, yeah. I'm going to start with you.
I think we're going to see a lot more of Molly trying to pick up the pieces.
Okay.
You know, she has Mr. Wrench. She's already sort of interrogated him a little bit. You know, he is obviously going to jail. So I think there's potential for her to continue that sort of thread, and really wean out where Lester, in a large part, has not covered his tracks,
right,
which is probably everywhere. So it's just a matter of time before she sort of connects the dots again. I mean, she already has that great blueprint, so it'll be interesting to see her in the next few episodes. As a viewer, I really come around on Molly. I mean, she was sort of a goody-two-shoes type character who I sort of despised on a lot of levels before. But now, I mean, she's so selfless to see her, as we were talking about, after losing her spleen, being shot in the hospital, being wheeled off in a wheelchair, she's still able to see, you know, the positive and think that way. So it's, you know, nice to see a character like that sort of succeed and to be able to cheer her on now.
Absolutely. Sarah, okay. Any predictions?
I have more hopes.
Okay. Share your hopes and dreams, darling.
I want more Key and Peele. If we
see more absolutely.
Of them.
I think we all want
okay,
more
good.
Key and Peele.
And then I think, or well, I hope that we see at least, if not in this next episode, because I know sometimes they like to, you know, give it an episode before they give us what we want.
Yeah.
I would like to see not like the actual carnage of what happened in that building, but why that building, who was in there, like what's up with that. I want to know, like burning questions in my mind about it. So I want that. We saw a little bit in the preview that Lester is continuing his womanizing. he's taking that confidence to some other ladies, which I'm kind of interested in seeing. So yeah, but that's pretty much it.
I'm still sticking to my prediction from, I think, the week before last that Molly's going to be kind of going into the dark side. You know, we saw her well, you know, she's worked so hard on this case, and she leaves the hospital, as you mentioned, saying we're winning this thing, and she gets there, and it's like the whole thing's wrapped up, and she must... I can imagine this is going to push her over the edge.
Do you think Lauren is going to, like, pull her to the dark side?
I don't think Lauren is. I think her desire for justice and truth to be served when no one else seems to give a shit.
Gonna make her do some
is gonna make her, and it already has. She's already, you know, violated all kinds of protocol and gone into Lester's house when he wasn't there and stuck her hand in the washing machine. She's done all kinds of things. I just see that this is gonna motivate her even farther, and it must. I imagine that Lester's behavior is gonna really aggravate her because he's walking around like he's got a swinging dick, and that is just gonna make her absolutely crazy. As it should. Yeah. So I'm sticking with that. That's what I really hope. And let's tell all the fans at home where they can find us. JB, I'd like to start with you. Where can they find you?
You guys can find me at JB underscore Zimmerman on Twitter and Instagram. I also host Riot on AfterBuzz TV, Ending Sunday, Silicon Valley, and Marin on Thursdays.
Please check out everything that JB does, because he's been so stellar on our panel. You are invited back anytime.
Yes. Totally. We might have to have five.
I'd be happy.
Yeah, we might have to have a five. Yeah. A five-some.
That'd be awesome.
And you, darling?
I am at Sarah on the Go, Sarah with an H on Twitter, and SarahBear627 on Instagram.
And I'm Oriana Leo. You can find me on Twitter at Miss Oriana Leo, Instagram, Oriana Leo, my website, OrianaLeo.com. Thank you so much for spending another evening with us and wrapping up Fargo on FX. We'll be back next week. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Later.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.